An American, retired American businessman named Bob Koprivica. He lives in Butte, Montana, and Bob was born here in America. He's 80 years old, but he has an ethnic background that's a mix of Croatian and Serbian, and he's very concerned about what's been going on in his former country, and he's concerned about the fact that his country today is involved in a conflict with his homeland, and he has a lot of strong contacts in the hierarchy there in Yugoslavia. And he was able, through his organization called Peace Without Violence in the Balkans, to make arrangements for us to get to people in the Milosevic family. We had lunch with his nephew, and then through the nephew and others, we were able to meet with Mr. Milosevic's wife. And after discussing things with his wife, we were able to meet with the president the next day. So we didn't go through the official request channels.
Now, we see on your ID there, you're a college professor. You work for KHOU Television as a military analyst, but you are not an official reporter at the station.
That's right. I think it would be a disparaging remark on the journalistic profession to call me a reporter. I'm actually a college professor. I'm the director of the Center for International Studies at the University of St. Thomas here in Houston. And before that, I was in the government. I spent 20 years as a military officer and then 3 more years as a civilian working for the Department of Defense and Arms Control Negotiations in Vienna, Austria.
So did your government and military experience lend itself as well to getting the interview?
Well, that's exactly why Mr. Koprivica asked me to go over. He knew that I knew the history of this area. I was trained through the PhD by the government as an expert or what we call a political military affairs officer in Eastern Europe. I went to school in Yugoslavia 23 years ago, and so these kinds of ties allowed me to interact with these Yugoslav officials and get to the point of the interview.
We'll get to calls in just a second for Ron Hatchett. Mr. Hatchett, how did you prepare for the interview?
There was no real prepare, Paul. I mean, I had things in mind that I thought the American people would like to know answers to. Why didn't they sign the peace agreement? Do they really intend to drive all the Albanians out of Kosovo? How do they explain the fact of the human misery we see with these Kosovo refugees? What about the American prisoners and so forth? And I simply sat down and asked those questions. You may notice that I didn't even have any notes in my hand. And certainly Mr. Milosevic had no forewarning at all about what I was going to ask him. There were no restrictions on me. It was a very relaxed atmosphere, actually. He came into the room with just himself and one aide, and there was the TV crew, and there were two people from the Peace Without Violence organization, and that was it.
Bonnie Lake, Washington Liberal Line, you are on with Ron Hatchett. Go right ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just have one question. After Milosevic, I listened to the part of the interview, but I listened to the part where he said that the Red Cross was never denied access to our three prisoners. Could you believe anything else he said after that, after he made such a blatant lie?
Well, I don't think he actually said they never had denied access. What he did say when I asked him, I said, you have not allowed them access. And I asked him, why don't you allow them access? And he says, there should be no problem. I will allow it. So this to me was one of the big changes in the situation that came from the interview. For the first time, he made a commitment as the president of Yugoslavia to now allow the Red Cross to see these prisoners. And I know my senator from Texas, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, is pushing the Red Cross and the government of the United States right now to see whether he will make good on that promise.
Call on the conservative line for Ron Hatchett, Torrington, Connecticut. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Hi, Mr. Hatchett.
Good morning.
I loved your interview, the way you conducted it so professionally and non-provocative is a good word to use. You know, what I don't understand is, do you believe that this man, as we portray him in America, okay, as the butcher of the Balkans, do you believe that he is really this peaceful man? And how does he explain that the refugees are running only from bombs when we didn't get involved with that war because of bombing? Of course, we got involved because of what they did to the Albanians. In other words, do you find him to be sincere or an outright liar?
Well, I think it's a little harsh to say he's an outright liar. You know, he's a politician, and just like our politicians, he puts the best spin he can on his position. And that's basically what I wanted to do with this interview, is to give him a chance to make his best case to the American people about his perspective of what's happening now in the Balkans. Whether we believe this part or other parts of this interview, or whether some parts of this interview cause us to change our own beliefs, you know, is something that each one of us can decide for ourselves. I think that, you know, his perception is that before the bombing started, there was this ongoing festering problem, but the degree of the problem was not nearly as great as it is right now. Before the bombing started, only about 2,000 people had been killed in Kosovo. Now about three times that number have been killed. Before the bombing, there were only about 125,000 people that were displaced. Now we have over 600,000. And so his argument is the only difference between the before and the after is the fact that we began the bombing. Now, you know, that is his position. Whether you believe all of this or not, I think it's good to have his perspective on what he thinks is going on.
We're talking with Ron Hatchett of the University of St. Thomas, the Center for International Studies. He's joining us live from Houston, Texas this morning. He is a military analyst for KHOU Television, and as we pointed out, he has held senior positions in the U.S. military and conducted about an hour-long interview on tape with Slobodan Milosevic. We say on tape, Mr. Hatchett, because you spent considerable more time with him that day. Is that right?
That's right, Paul. After the interview, we did the interview first. And then after the interview, he was gracious to give us another about an hour and a half to discuss things over coffee in the White House there. And so we got some additional insights to what's in his mind.
Coos Bay, Oregon, on the moderate line for Ron Hatchett. Hello.
Good morning. First, I'd like to really thank C-SPAN for their coverage. I've got both a question as well as a brief comment. My question, if I could hang on to offer the comment, my question for you, Ron, and by the way, I'm an ex-Houstonian myself, is how did you feel about Milosevic's basic credibility? I mean, did you get the overall impression? Yes, he's a politician, but was he credible and truthful?
Well, you know, it's a difficult thing to judge from just one meeting, but my overall impression from this meeting that he's a very personable fellow. He showed a full range of emotion, from humor to anger to some kind of a disgust and resignation. I got the feeling that in many of the things he was saying, he was very sincere. I think he really was shocked and did not understand that we would really prosecute the air war as strongly as we have done. But as far as things like the refugees are fleeing only because of the bombing, those kinds of things, he may believe that. I don't know. I mean, but it's hard for us, of course, to believe that that's totally the reason that they're fleeing. And so, you know, it makes me say, well, I don't know that I 100% agree with this position.
Coos Bay, you said you had a comment as well?
Well, right. And in fact, Ron, your response kind of, would you, if you were a civilian in Kosovo, would you stick around?
Well, you know, the reality is that most of them do. I mean, the reality is there's 1.8 million Albanians that lived in Kosovo before the bombing started. Now 600,000 are out. That means close to a million are still there. And I know we have a lot of concerns about their condition, and there have been reports that many of them have been driven from their homes and they're displaced inside of Kosovo, and there's a lot of worry about that. But did you notice that Mr. Milosevic, when I raised that issue with him, he says, send the Red Cross, send the United Nations High Commission for Refugees to see what these people, you can send them right now. And that's a pretty hefty challenge. I mean, if we are serious about the concern of the welfare of the people that are still inside Kosovo, I think we ought to take him up on it. I think we ought to send the Red Cross and the UN Refugee Commission in to see what is the current situation of these civilians that are left behind in Kosovo. Why speculate on both sides and call each other on both sides' positions wrong? Let's verify it for ourselves. He made the offer.
Back to the liberal line for Ron Hatchett. St. Paul, go right ahead.
Good morning. Mr. Hatchett, I'm wondering about your response to the idea that Mr. Milosevic is now being blamed in the last few weeks for all of the evils that have occurred in the breakup of the former Yugoslavia. I noticed that Izetbegovic of Bosnia or Tuđman of Croatia are no longer held responsible for anything that's happened there. And I wonder about your point of view regarding Germany's having recognized in 1991 Croatia and Slovenia as the cause of the war in Yugoslavia.
Well, I think that that's certainly a major cause. I mean, as someone who has studied this area and tracked this area for over 25 years, under international law, anytime a country is going to dismember itself, you're supposed to sit down with all the parties and discuss the terms of the dismembership, including things like apportioning of debts and apportioning of resources, drawing the new boundaries of the countries that will result, and so forth. They did that in Czechoslovakia when Czechoslovakia came apart. In the case of Yugoslavia, you had some peoples who wanted to withdraw from Yugoslavia, the Slovenes and the Croatians initially in 1991. And Germany unilaterally recognized them. And Germany pressed the EU to recognize these unilateral declarations. And so there was no negotiations for the dismembership. And I know that the Bush administration at that time counseled very heavily, especially Secretary of State James Baker, told them that if you don't sit down and negotiate the terms of this dissolution of Yugoslavia, you're going to have a bloody civil war on your hand. And that's exactly what happened in the aftermath.
Ron Hatchett conducted the interview with Yugoslavian President Slobodan Milosevic earlier this week. It was in Belgrade. Ron Hatchett, explain exactly, again, where you did the interview and what was around you. What was the scene like? Tell us more about that.
Well, the interview was done at the White House there. He has two residences in the White House. One of them was destroyed yesterday. I mean, two residences in Belgrade. One was destroyed yesterday, or day before. This one that we were at is called the White House. It's a ceremonial home where he receives dignitaries. As I said, when we arrived, we were ushered into this very large ceremonial reception room with a seating area. The cameras were already set up. The only people in that room at that time were the four people, the technicians running the camera. Mr. Milosevic came walking in right on time with his chief of cabinet with him. Introduced himself, and after about 3 or 4 minutes of small talk, we sat down and went through the interview. After the interview, we went into a private and more intimate room, and we had coffee, and we discussed this whole range of issues. I gave him what I thought was the American perspective of what had to be in a negotiated outcome, and he seemed to listen very intently to that. But it was a very gracious host. I didn't see any armed guards or any kind of security in this situation.
We have a call from Osage Beach, Missouri, on the conservative line. Good morning.
Good morning. I kind of half resent other heads of state explaining things, what we should do, and how many refugees has England taken. My other comment is, does Clinton did this mostly to keep his ratings up, to improve, to keep the economy strong?
Any response, Ron Hatchett?
Well, you know, I don't want to get into impugning the motives of President Clinton. I get that kind of question sometimes, and I really can't get inside his head. I do believe that we were a little quick to grab the military tool. The military tool is not a very efficient tool for solving problems, especially when you employ it in a piecemeal manner the way we're doing, where we're using air power only. The military trains and plans to fight in a joint situation with air, ground, and air forces. So if you try to use just one, you're not going to be very effective. And I think most of the military leaders, it's very clear, told the president that this concept is not going to work. And so we're in this thing. The prestige of the United States and NATO is on the line, but we don't seem to have achieved anything of much that we set out to achieve. In fact, all of the things that we said we were going to try to make better, we've made worse. More people killed, more people displaced, and we're about to bring Albania into the war because we're going to be operating off of their territory against troops in Kosovo. And so all of the things that we said we were going to try to stop, we're going to make a lot worse. So I think there's very poor planning in what we were doing here.
What's your perception of the NATO meeting here in Washington as we look at the headline, the lead story in the Washington Post? NATO softens conditions. They're pointing out that a new communique was written yesterday representing a series of compromises struck by NATO leaders, in their opinion here in the Washington Post, to maintain the cohesion of the alliance 1 month into a growing bombing campaign that has produced only mixed results. They point out that they had a three-hour meeting here on the Kosovo air war. The alliance said it is, quote, prepared to suspend its airstrikes once the government of Milosevic has begun, rather than completed, a withdrawal of troops and security forces from Kosovo. What do you make of that?
Well, Paul, I think that I am optimistic. I do think that there is a possibility that we're going to see some breakthroughs in the near term on the negotiated side of the House. Mr. Milosevic has said he will give autonomy to the Albanians. He said he will accept all of the refugees back into Kosovo. He said he will accept an international presence in the tape. He says civilian only. But I told him that just is not going to work. The West is going to insist that it be a military presence. And if you really want a negotiated outcome, you're going to have to get off of this position. But also the West is making some concessions. We are making very clear, President Clinton recently has emphasized that we're for autonomy, not independence, for the Kosovo Albanians. If you look at the Rambouillet Agreement, you can call it what you want, but that was independence that we were structuring into Rambouillet, which is what we had to give in Rambouillet to get the Albanians to sign. We're backing away from that. And so I see the initial outlines of a compromise emerging here, where they go back to the autonomy that the Kosovo had in 1989, where there is an international military presence, and this is another compromise. We used to say NATO military presence. We now say international military presence, which means probably Russians, Belarusians, a heavy contingent of Greeks, etc., in that military force. And I think the sweetener of this thing is, if Mr. Milosevic, if you implement all of these things that you say you will do in terms of bringing the Albanians back, giving them autonomy, accepting this military force, then there's no longer any reasons for us to maintain economic sanctions on Yugoslavia. We can lift these economic sanctions that were imposed in 1994. We can free Yugoslav assets abroad that have been frozen for Yugoslav private citizens, corporations, and government.
More calls for Ron Hatchett, Richmond, Virginia, on the moderate line. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to know, Mr. Hatchett, if you think, in unison with the Red Cross, is there in reality any peaceful solution at this point?
Well, what I just outlined, I think, is the best possible peaceful solution, and I think it's where the two sides are drifting. I think in the interim, however, there's still a lot of human misery, and I think that's where the Red Cross can come in. I believe that if the Red Cross would take the risk of going back to Kosovo right now and traveling in their white vehicles with a Red Cross on it from village to village, anywhere they suspect that there may be any kind of atrocities going on, just their very presence would be a deterrent to anything that's going on, if it was going on. And if it's not going on, then fine. They can report to us that they've been through this area, and our fears about atrocities occurring in some village or that village in Kosovo are unfounded. So I think the Red Cross has a role to play, and I wish they would play it.
More calls hanging on for Ron Hatchett. San Francisco, you're on the liberal line.
Second Army Airborne, the elite force protecting the Apache helicopters and so forth. I listened to Milosevic's speech a moment ago, and he made it sound as if the bombing on NATO's part is why those hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people are at those borders. That is absolutely outrageous, and it really, really sends a crystal clear message as to what kind of a character this we're dealing with, and it does not make him look as if he has anything sensible to say.
Well, you know, what I would say to you is this. If it is true that their program is to create an ethnically pure Serbian state, then they have a lot of work to do, because if you look at the population of Serbia, 35% of the population of Serbia is non-Serb. As I think he pointed out, there are 26 different ethnic groups. The only ethnic group that they're having trouble with right now are the Albanians. Why, if they want to ethnically cleanse their country, don't they start with some of these other ethnic groups, like the Hungarians that are concentrated in the north, or the Slovaks, or maybe the Muslims that are in the Sanjak region? Why is it they're only having trouble with the people in Albania? And his answer to that is because that's the only place where there is a separation movement that's armed, that's attacking neighbors and attacking the governmental officials. Now, I don't doubt that there are some atrocities that are going on. But to say that this whole problem is the result of nothing more than one man's intentions to ethnically cleanse his whole country, I think is a very simplistic explanation of what's going on in this region. The only other thing I would point out to you is that he had a lot of time before the 24th of March to do what is going on right now had he been the sole motivator for doing this. It's only been since the 24th of March that these vast numbers of refugees that we are seeing have been out on the road. So it's much more complicated to me than just saying that it's ethnic cleansing determination on his part and you can't believe a thing he's saying.
20 minutes left with Ron Hatchett, a professor. He's joining us from Houston this morning and conducted an interview with Slobodan Milosevic earlier this week. Mr. Hatchett, here is a fax. Could the other main U.S. network correspondents in Belgrade also have set up an interview with Milosevic? But they did not. Did they ever try?
Yes, they certainly tried. In fact, in the week before I was before I got the interview, Dan Rather from CBS was there, and I talked to Dan Rather two or three times. And in fact, as I said, I'm not a journalist. I think it would have been far better if Dan Rather had conducted this interview. And I was trying to get Dan Rather into this interview. The problem is we're trying to go through the official channels, and we put our request into the bureaucracy, and it churns up the bureaucracy, and there's all of these little stopgap locations where some bureaucrat that doesn't think that the president needs to talk to the Western media can kill this thing. I found it ironic that I had been trying for 2 weeks to get this access to Mr. Milosevic, and when I finally talked to his wife, 24 hours before the interview, she says, "Why didn't you come to me earlier?" And I said, "We've been trying to come to you earlier. We just couldn't find the right path."
When did you get back to the U.S.?
I came back on Tuesday evening.
What was the reaction to the interview from folks back home, particularly your journalistic colleagues?
Well, they thought it was a great scoop or whatever, but that wasn't my intention. My intention is just to give the American people as much information as they can get about what's going on there so that we can make a more informed decision about where we ought to go from here. We are in a serious crisis here. This isn't a video game. People are dying and people are being displaced from their homes, and the prospects for Americans to be suffering more in terms of not just their treasure that they're spending, but in lives lost if we go to an intensification in a ground campaign is very high. And if we're going to do that, we need to make that decision on the best informed basis we can, and that's what I was trying to do with this interview.
Let's get a call from here in Washington, D.C. on the moderate line. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you to C-SPAN. I have a point to make. The French TV was very critical toward this interview, saying that it was conducted in a way that's not usual for a democratic country, and it's no surprise that Milosevic didn't accept and wouldn't accept Dan Rather or any other journalist to conduct it, because he would be in trouble answering the right questions. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, you know, I debated with myself when I was conducting this interview about how I should approach it. You know, I have some problems, and I have things about what he said that I didn't necessarily agree with in 100%. But it doesn't matter what Ron Hatchett thinks about these things, or if I gave my best argument or my best rebuttal to some of the things that he said. I'm not in government anymore, and I don't make these life and death decisions. And also, I have the faith that the American people don't need me to debate on their behalf with Slobodan Milosevic. They are smart enough to listen to what the man has to say and decide for themselves what they believe and what they don't believe. And so I decided that my approach was simply to ask the questions, let him answer with no restrictions. He had no knowledge what I was going to ask him, so these answers had to come quickly off the top of his head. And he has to stand by these answers. And I thought it was a good chance for the American people just to make up their own mind whether this guy was speaking something that they could believe or whether he was speaking something that even made them more certain that he was not someone that we could deal with.
Was there anything that you didn't get to ask that you would have liked to have asked or learned?
No, I had, as I said, 66 minutes. About everything else that I wanted to ask was there. One thing that I had wished he had talked a little bit more about, I wanted to know who he was as a person. You know, what are his values? Tell me about your family and these kinds of things. He kind of shied away from that in the beginning. But I didn't know anything else about the war that I could have asked him that we didn't ask.
Let's go to New York City on the conservative line for Professor Ron Hatchett. Hello.
Hi. I was just wondering, why do we believe Clinton and not what Milosevic says? I mean, the Serbs are fighting for their homelands, whereas our own troops are fighting for basically their scholarship. And I don't understand why Americans believe this liar, Clinton. I mean, he's destroyed both of the countries, basically. What I basically want to know is, why do you think we basically side with the KLA, a terrorist group?
I don't know. This is a very vexing type question. I mean, the reality is, and this is not supposition, it's fact, that through 1997, the KLA was listed on the State Department list of terrorist organizations. And in there, they said that the KLA was participating in drug running to Europe and gun running to criminal elements in Europe and the Middle East, and also was providing training camps for Osama bin Laden. And then suddenly in 1998, we shift our position and the KLA drops off of the list of terrorist organizations. You know, it's this answer that politics makes strange bedfellows. We have a policy that is against the capability of Yugoslavia to crack down on the Albanians, and we're looking for allies that can help us in that policy, and the KLA was the most logical ally. And so we were willing to shift our position on whether the KLA was a terrorist organization or a freedom fighter, and they're now freedom fighters. And it's just a case of political expediency.
Again, the Milosevic interview will replay this evening and will replay tomorrow. Get you specific air times in just a couple of minutes. A little bit later today, a couple of international journalists, one from Germany, one from the Czech Republic, concerning the NATO 50th anniversary meeting, and lots more live coverage throughout the day and the rest of the weekend of the summit here in Washington, D.C. Raleigh, North Carolina, appreciate you calling in. What would you like to ask Mr. Hatchett?
Yes. Yes. Ron, northern U.S. people burned Atlanta. Where were the French? Where were the English then? I'm a southern boy. My great-great-grandma was raped, and her husband was killed. Is the world trying to be more civil now?
Well, certainly we would like to think that we're more civil now than we were 100 years ago. And as somebody pointed out to me recently, if there had been C-SPAN or CNN during the time of the Trail of Tears, when we forced the educated and civilized tribes from eastern United States to Oklahoma, the Cherokees, and that had been reported, maybe the British and the French would have invaded us then. War is the most heinous thing that mankind has ever invented. There is no such thing as a clean war. Every time we opt for that military tool, people are going to suffer. People are going to die. People are going to lose their homes, their livelihoods. You know, the estimates are that we've spent $6 billion already on what's going on here. And the estimates in Yugoslavia are that they have lost $12 billion worth of economic assets. 500,000 workers in Yugoslavia no longer have jobs because we've destroyed their plants. And I'm not talking about military plants. I'm talking about things like vacuum cleaner plants, pharmaceutical plant, a heating plant that provides heat for high-rise buildings in the working-class districts of Belgrade. Things like this, it is a heinous thing, war, and I think that we ought to think twice, even today, before we reach for that military weapon to decide issues in the international community.
A couple of emails here, Ron Hatchett, from some other viewers around the country. I get the impression from watching your interview with President Milosevic that he could be talked to and problems negotiated. After your visit, Do you wonder at the lack of understanding and ability of our State Department and administration to talk to this man and figure out some other way to solve Yugoslavia's people problem, rather, besides bombing their country to a mush? I applaud your efforts.
Well, you know, I think it can be talked to, too. As I said in the private conversation after the taping, when we were talking about a possible negotiated outcome, and he was reiterating again that for sovereignty reasons, Yugoslavia could not accept another armed force on its territory. And I just looked him in the eye and told him, I'm sorry, that is not going to work. President Clinton cannot back away from this problem. The American people will not back away from this problem unless the minimum conditions are met, that we have autonomy for the Albanians and a return of the refugees and an armed military force there to guarantee their security. And he sat back and looked at me intently, and it seemed to register on him. And I'm hoping that right now what we're hearing from Viktor Chernomyrdin, the Russian negotiator, is an indicator that he has finally told Chernomyrdin, okay, I will take an international military force as long as it's not led by the United States or Britain, whom he sees as the main protagonist against him right now.
A couple of other emails here. I think it is a disgrace that you and C-SPAN would give this criminal airtime to spread his lies. Another email, it is a shame on Mr. Hatchett to represent Milosevic as a peaceful man. Action speaks louder than words. You should have asked him to pull his criminal troops out of Kosovo. Any reaction?
Yeah, the reaction is simply this. I mean, in our society, we make the assumption that we're all free thinkers. It doesn't threaten me at all for Milosevic to tell me anything he wants to tell me, even if it appears to me to be the biggest lie I've ever heard. What is the harm in that? At least it gives me the chance to assess for myself what kind of man this guy is. And I think that's better than saying we don't want to hear anything from these other points of view because we don't want anything that might interfere with our perceptions of what's going on there. So in a free speech society like ours, I don't think I have to apologize to anybody for giving them the chance to make up their own mind based on what this man has to say.
Let's get a call from the state of Florida, Ponte Vedra Beach. Good morning.
Yes, my question for Mr. Hatchett is, if Mr. President Milosevic says that the Albanians are fleeing from our bombs, why aren't any Serbs leaving, and did you ask him that?
Well, they are leaving. They are leaving. There have been something like 89,000 refugees that have fled into Serbia, and ironically, some of those are Albanians that have fled into Serbia. And I would also point out, when you see these figures about people that are fleeing into Montenegro, Montenegro is part of Yugoslavia, and Montenegro, the people there, are Serbs. So there are refugees fleeing into those areas, and many of them are Serbs and non-Serbs as well, like Gypsies, Macedonians, and other minorities that live in that area.
Ron Hatchett, did you talk to regular folks in Belgrade?
I did a lot of talking out on the street, and this is one of the things that was the biggest surprise to me. There is almost total unanimity amongst the Yugoslav people backing the idea of Yugoslavia has to hold on to Kosovo. Even though only 200,000 Serbs live in Kosovo, Kosovo is the historical and religious center of the Serbian society. As they tell me, it is both their soul and their heart. It is to them as Jerusalem is to the Jews. Even though most Jews don't live in Jerusalem, every Jew carries Jerusalem in their heart. And the same thing is true for the Serbians. And so there's total unity. This is not a fight, as it's sometimes depicted, between NATO and one man, the dictator Slobodan Milosevic. This is a genuine fight between us and the Serbian nation, and they are united in saying that they will fight to defend what they perceive to be their heart and soul, and that's Kosovo. I talked to this one young lady, for example, and I asked her, I said, if we could get rid of Slobodan Milosevic, do you think this would solve the problem? She says, no, because today, every one of us is Slobodan Milosevic. And I think that that is true, whereas he was opposed by maybe 50-60% of the Yugoslav people who were looking for a change a year ago. Today, they're all behind him because he's the symbol of what they perceive to be their struggle.
We have about 5 minutes left with Professor Ron Hatchett. Petaluma, California, you're on the moderate line. Hello.
Good morning, Professor Hatchett. It's wonderful to see somebody from an academic environment to get involved into some political process. Question I have is, do you think your whole full interview was, how long did it take, the whole interview, is it going to be air on C-SPAN? The total interview, that's question one. And number two is, does he actually rule like with Iron Fist, like the way he was he's portrayed in the West, like Saddam Hussein?
First of all, you saw the whole interview. There's 66 minutes on tape, and I think CNN just ran the total 66 minutes.
C-SPAN,
and, yeah. C-SPAN, excuse me, I'm sorry. Secondly, Milosevic is not as much in control as we would like to think. He rules in a coalition government with two other parties. One is a very radical party headed by a guy named Vojislav Šešelj. It's called the Serbian Radical Party. Milosevic's party has 123 seats in the parliament. Šešelj has 81 seats. And then there's another party that is a more democratic party headed by a man named Vuk Drašković. He has about 43 seats in the assembly. And it takes all three of these to have, for Milosevic to have a majority in the parliament. Now, the way this plays out is this. Before I came over, I was told by people that were close to Mr. Milosevic that there was a very good chance that I could see the American prisoners, and a good chance that I may even be able to make arrangements to take them home. That came to a screeching halt about a week into my visit because of the opposition of Vojislav Šešelj. The Serbian Radical Party was absolutely against it. They threatened to withdraw from the coalition government, and they had the backing of the military, and that killed it. So my perception is Slobodan Milosevic understands the benefits that could come publicity-wise from his releasing the prisoners, but he's not able to do it.
Again, our plans here at C-SPAN are to replay the Milosevic interview twice, tonight in prime time and tomorrow, Sunday. We'll get you those airtimes just as soon as we can get them together, and we'll continue to take a couple calls here for Ron Hatchett, and we will go to the NATO meeting a little bit later today, talk with a couple of international journalists, and again, live events throughout the day here. New York City, thanks for hanging on. You're on the Liberal Line.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
Ron was mentioning how the Red Cross hasn't been doing their job properly over there. Yes, Slobodan Milosevic hasn't allowed the Red Cross to see out three POWs. How about that?
Well, that's true, and that was a major point that I made in the lecture when he was talking about they were being treated according to the Geneva Convention. And I reminded him that under the Geneva Convention, the Red Cross should be given access. And he extemporaneously said, of course they can have access. That is no problem. So to me, this is a major concession that he made in this interview, and we should follow up on it right away. And I think there are steps underway to follow up on it to test it right now.
Ron Hatch, a couple more questions about your experience as the interviewer in Belgrade. Did you see any of the bomb damage around you?
Yeah, I did. I visited bomb damage not only in Belgrade, but I was also in Novi Sad, also down at a little village called Aleksinac, where the bombs went astray and hit in a residential area and completely obliterated a block of apartment houses and stone houses. And I was also in the city of Niš looking at the bomb damage.
What went through your mind when you saw that?
Well, you know, two things. One is the technical capability of the cruise missile is absolutely awesome. It is extremely accurate, and the damage that it does when it hits is very severe. The first night I was in Belgrade was the cruise missile attack on the military headquarters in the center of Belgrade. This cruise missile came within 400 meters of my hotel window, and I watched it fly down the corridor, and it sounded like a 747 about to land in my parking lot out there. Then it banked to the left sharply and went directly into this police headquarters, the military headquarters, which was surrounded by many other buildings. Awesome weapon. The thing that bothered me the most is that we are striking a lot of targets that to me have little or no military utility, like the heating plant that provides the hot water for working class people in high rises and the hot water for their bathing and their heating of their homes. What is the military utility of that? What's the military utility of striking a pharmaceutical plant, the only pharmaceutical plant that they have that produces things like insulin for diabetics, blood pressure medicine, and things like this? What's the military utility of hitting a vacuum cleaner factory or a tobacco factory, which I saw? It seems to me that the strategy is that if we can make the lives of the Yugoslav people miserable by destroying their livelihoods, they will demand a change in the policy of their government or the government itself. And I don't think it works. What I do see is the increasing anger on their part against us. And like one guy told me that was about 20 years old, he says, I'm glad I'm 20 years old because I can hate you for another 50 years. I mean, this kind of thing is really backfiring on us.
Mr. Hatchett, there's also been some debate about the military utility of Serb TV. We have a photo here, which is in many of the papers today, of the damage when a bomb hit the Serbian state television. The headline here in the Baltimore Sun, survivors decry NATO strike on Serbian TV headquarters. You have an interesting background because you're in the military as a past career. You work for a television station now. Put the two together and give us your thoughts on this.
Well, my thoughts is I'm just really abhorred at this, actually, because I was in that TV station several times when we were there, transmitting things to my home station. You know, we say we did this because of it was used as propaganda. You know, the reality is that the Serbian people every day can see everything that we see about what's going on in this war. They do not, the Serbian authorities do not block CNN. It's on every cable and satellite set in Serbia. I watched it every day. BBC, Sky Channel, all these Western sources are providing all the information about refugees and the live briefings from NATO on the bombing campaigns, live press conferences for President Clinton, etc. The thing that the Serbian TV does provide, however, is you noticed on American TV, every time we show pictures of what the bombing campaign has done in Yugoslavia, the pictures always have a caption at the bottom, say, pictures from Serbian TV. So, you know, who are we trying to deny information to? The Serbian people or to the people in the West that might be seeing the effects of our bombing of what's going on? To me, that was no legitimate military target whatsoever.
Let's get a couple more calls for Ron Hatchett on this Saturday edition of the Washington Journal, Dumont, New Jersey. You're on the conservative line.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hatchett. First of all, I have a quick comment and a question. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your interview. It opened up my mind to quite a bit. And on your reference to Dan Rather, I would have been afraid that his questions would have been more of a prepared questionnaire from our administration and not from our the American people, as you said. And I would like to know, what was your reservations prior to this interview, and your beliefs, and what has changed in result of this interview after the interview?
Well, my reservations are that I had seen the images that you've seen of the human misery, and I had some severe questions about why these people were leaving, and I had some concerns about how many will eventually be coming. I was alleviated somewhat by the comments that he made. President Milosevic made a very clear distinction between Albanians that he said are separatists that want independence and that are supporting the armed rebellion for independence, and Albanians that are content to continue to live as Yugoslav citizens inside of Kosovo. That gave me a ray of hope that maybe indeed he is not going to try to expel all Albanians and that he's trying to deal with those who are supporting the armed rebellion. Time is going to tell on this. If he continues to expel people and more and more leave this country because of the expulsion, then it proves that his explanations are not true. If, on the other hand, we see a slowing down of the number of refugees that come out of this area, then what he's saying has a degree of truth to it. And I think we're just going to have to wait to see how this plays out. And I think we're going to have to wait to see whether we have any of these possible negotiated outcomes that I've talked about just previously begin to take shape.
Back to a caller from our moderate line, Reading, Pennsylvania.
Hi. I was wondering, since I'm a college student and you're also a college professor, I guess you can see how little involvement there is from the college students and university students. No one really seems to have much concern. Well, actually, they do have concern, but from what I see here on colleges, a lot of the students are really against the Serb people. They even just completely categorize the Serb people and say all of them are killing Albanians. And I know for a fact that that is not true because I just got back from Yugoslavia in January, and I am against NATO airstrikes. And I was wondering, you as yourself, you don't seem completely for what's going on there. And I was wondering what your opinion is completely on this whole situation over there.
Thanks.
Well, I think that the airstrikes were the wrong decision, even though I'm a former Air Force officer. They were the wrong decision for a couple of reasons. One, they've increased rather than decreased the human misery in that area, including the misery on the Albanians themselves. Two, they're a great overreaction in terms of the damage that they're doing to Yugoslavia in its economic infrastructure and to the lives of the people. In civilians, there have been about 3,000 civilians that have been killed in this air campaign thus far. And three, it hasn't achieved any of the objectives that we're wanting to achieve. And I don't think we did all we could do for a negotiated outcome. Rambouillet was not a serious negotiation. There was no negotiation there except between the United States and the Albanians and a diktat given to the Serbians. So it was not a serious negotiation. I think Mr. Milosevic made a good point that if there is going to be a solution to this problem, it has to be a solution that's negotiated amongst the people that are going to live there in perpetuity, not people from the outside. And so there needs to be a process of negotiations where Albanians sit down with Serbs and negotiate what is going to be the new situation in Kosovo. Now, the international community can sponsor that, but they shouldn't try to dictate the terms.
Where are your students coming down on all this?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that my students have a better historical perspective on all this than many of the people in the United States have. I would say most of my students also have views that would say that the military solution is not the correct solution. I would say, however, that all of my students, including me, believe that the rights of all peoples in Yugoslavia, Serb, non-Serb, Albanian, they all need to have equal rights and they need to be able to live free from terror and free from interference in their daily lives. That does not mean that each ethnic group has the right to decide when and under what conditions it's going to withdraw from recognized states. If we establish that principle, that all you have to do is be a majority in a particular region of a state, create a military rebellion, and you can detach yourself from that state, not only is the whole of the Balkans going to unravel because of all the minorities that are living in states in that area, but even in Europe, places like the Basque areas, the Britain areas of France, the areas in the UK and Scotland and Wales and other places. I mean, this is a Pandora's box that I don't think we want to go into.
Ron Hatchett, we'll let you go now. Thank you very much for sharing your experience with the Milosevic interview and your thoughts in general, joining us from Houston. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Paul.
We'll again bring you Ron Hatchett's interview with Yugoslav leader Slobodan Milosevic tomorrow morning here on C-SPAN. You can see it at 10 a.m. Eastern.